Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm Andrew Millen, and you're listening to the Celtic Soul Podcast. You're all very welcome to episode 22. My guest on the show will be John Fallon, who recently celebrated his 80th birthday. John, the original Celtic holy goalie, long before Adam Berg's time. I would like to thank all the businesses and supporters clubs who have sponsored the podcast so far. If you would like to become a sponsor, please email us at info@celticfanzine.com. You can also contact us through the website or message us on social media. Over the last few weeks, we've had a lockdown in Aberdeen, Ballingolligay, postponements, meat plant closures, Mid-Leinster in lockdown, and further restrictions with the backdrop of Trump's tweets, the opposition leader in Russia getting poisoned, explosions in Lebanon, a rigged election in Belarus, the list goes on and on. Has the world gone mad? Or has it always been like this? All I want to do is get back to football and get a few points with the boys. And that's before even thinking about my plan for world peace. So it was nice to read some positive news yesterday. Nicola Sturgeon has indicated that a limited number of football fans could return to stadiums under strict physical distancing rules. As Celtic fans, this is music to our ears, as we have not seen the inside of Celtic Park since we brushed St Mirren aside back in March. No doubt about it, if limited fans are allowed back in Celtic Park, the debates will kick off about who should or should not be allowed back in first. Get ready for a social media meltdown. The Celtic and Rangers game is going to happen in October, and every fan wants to be in for that one. We wait in hope. My guest on the podcast today is John Fallon. John played for Celtic during our most successful period in our unbroken history. A member of the famous Lisbon Lions squad, he played at the highest level for over a decade with his boyhood team and left with a bag full of medals and memories. And he played his part in the first 9 in a row. John, you're very welcome to the Celtic Soul Podcast. I'd like to wish you a happy birthday. I'm sure you enjoyed the celebrations surrounded by your family and friends. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there because of the COVID travel restrictions. Are you looking forward to getting back to see Celtic after Nicola Sturgeon announced that limited capacity could be allowed back in mid-September?
I am indeed. And thanks for the birthday wishes, Andrew. Yeah, I enjoyed it with my family and missed watching the Thames. Oh, been terrible. I have a wee friend, Tommy Stevenson. He can't come through to Glasgow, but he's got to go to Celtic Park. He thinks it's the 15th station of the cross. He's got to go there. It's just cracking up. So today's news will be good, that we can get in September. So I hope I'm allocated a little seat so that I can get back there and watch my hoops and get the anxieties left out me. You know, I don't know if I'll be allowed to shout, will I?
I'm sure you will if you're social distance from Charlie McGinley and Tommy Stevenson and all the boys. Yeah, John, I'm sure you are all missing your little get-together at the pool's office before every game.
Well, I've now changed areas now. I'm round at the Lisbon Line entrance, so it's easier. They gave me a new car parking facility around there, so I only walk about 50 yards into the entrance up in the elevator, and that's me up towards my seat. So I miss the boys, but we still have our little meetings. We have still have our meals, maybe once a week, sometimes twice. It all depends, but we always make sure we meet and talk about the game. It wouldn't be the same if we didn't talk about the game, would it?
Is that the famous breakfast club?
Yeah, we just... Well, the breakfast club, it's a while we've had it. See, that's fixed as well with this COVID. You know, we're only allowed X amount in. So that's got to be sorted out. Hopefully, we can get it fixed out. We get back to Carrigan's and enjoy ourselves.
John, you just tell the listeners what the breakfast club is.
It's the boys that stood outside old Poole's office. And every Monday, maybe once a month, we go up to Carrigan's and Blantyre. And we have a breakfast club. It's coffees, rolls and sausages, rolling eggs, whatever we want. You can have a breakfast. And we discuss everything and anything about Celtic. And we all have our views. And it's just a great discussion, sitting down talking about the previous week or month, whatever it is. We just sit down and have a right good chat for about maybe 3 hours, 2 hours, 3 hours.
I've always wanted to attend one of these, John, and the next time I do attend, I'll bring the tape recorder and I'll get all your thoughts down. And maybe we could do a podcast from the Breakfast Club.
Well, that'd be great. Great. You'd be well, more than welcome.
So just for the benefit of the listeners, if you hear a dog barking, it will be Delia, John's faithful dog, who I'm informed by one of your sons that when a Rangers fan walks by the house, he tends to bark at them.
I don't know where they got that from. I don't know who taught them how to do that. You see a few of them coming up and down from the station, and they, if they look in the door, they're in trouble. The dog just tells them where to go in its own language. It says meepy calling at them.
Well, thank God no referees are walking by, because it would be you that would be barking at them.
Oh, no, the dog would be out the window. The chief would be. Oh, definitely. Oh, I'm teaching her how to behave.
Johnny, you were born into a Celtic family. For 18 years, you followed them, you played for them.
Yeah.
Now, at the moment, we've got two goalkeepers vying for a place. First impressions of the new boy, first, Vasilis Bargas.
Well, the first impression was down at Kilmarnock. Who wants to play in these crap pitches? They should be kicked out of football. We've lost the centre-half through these footballs. Parks, and I was pleased as punch when I seen him coming out and catching a cross ball. Oh, I've never seen a goalkeeper doing it for Scott Bain done it last season when he was playing. You know, they practice taking crosses before the game, hitting balls into the middle for the goalkeeper to come and take a cross ball. But when the cross balls come in during the game, where's the goalkeeper standing in his line? He's not allowed to come out. 6'7", and when they jump, they're nothing. They're 6 foot. They don't come out there off their goals. Big job would be going off his nut. I was just saying to Jim Craig at the weekend, could you imagine if I'd come off my line 8-10 yards for a cross ball that was hanging there? You would be shouting at me, Billy would be shouting at me, Tam would be shouting at me, and Big Job would be screaming, not coming for a cross ball. That's my only complaint I've got about our modern keepers. They will not come out for a cross ball 6 yards or anything. I don't know why they're not allowed to come out. Why do you have big 6'7" men? You know, Ronnie was 5'10". I was 6 foot. We could come off our line. You know, I was told to come 10 yards at times. And this is only the fault I've got against goalkeepers now. They will not come out for cross balls.
And John, you've played there. You mentioned Ronnie. You played with some other keepers. You fought with them for the starting jersey. What advice would you give Scott Bain? You know, he's going to have to wait for his chance. And he had to play earlier in the season knowing that he was not going to be the first choice.
I actually feel sorry for the boy because I think he's a good goalkeeper. Honest to God, I think he's a good goalkeeper. Like any other goalkeeper, tell me, if you don't make a mistake, you're not a goalkeeper. If you don't make a mistake, you don't learn. But I just actually feel sorry for the boy because I thought he was doing well. The ball at your feet, that's not a goalkeeper. You'd be better playing without hands. You know, the game, they've changed the rules. You've got to pass the ball back. The goalkeeper's got to play with his feet. That's not goalkeeping. Goalkeeping's an art. You've got to use your hands and be quick off your line. Feed the ball. You know, if I took my time with a ball at my hands or my feet, not getting it to one of my players, I had to throw the ball almost immediately. out to Jimmy, out to Big Yogi, Bobby Murdoch, anybody, Wally Wallace, Stevie. Get it there. Play fast. At times we play too slow with this ball going across the park. And that's the only fault I've got. More direct. Like a wee bit more like what we did in early on Tuesday evening, playing by direct football, pass the ball quick, getting the ball into their box, and that's put their goalkeeper under pressure. But that's the only problem I don't like with goalkeepers. They don't come off the line.
Yeah, before, and, John, we move off goalkeepers, you played with plenty of goalkeepers, and you've seen every Celtic goalkeeper from you started going to watch football. If you could pick a player out of all them goalkeepers, even the modern players are back, who would be one player we'd pick out that's been a standout over all the years of Celtic?
Of the goalkeepers? It'd be difficult because even going to Arthur, Boric and that, Arthur was a great keeper. He was a stopper. Ronnie was the same. I can go back to Wally Miller, who was my idol as a kid, wee John Bonner. We could cope with this new modern game of the ball at your feet. And to judge a goalkeeper now to the goalkeepers that we had, it's difficult, you know, to say what you could do. I think this boy looks better with the ball at his feet. That's the only problem. To pick out a goalkeeper now with modern, to play in this modern game, I would think the new boy looks pretty confident. But, yeah, but I don't, they're in the class that we were.
But I've often heard you speak about different goalkeepers and that, and he was called, I suppose, the second holy goalie. I remember doing a live show with you, and you kind of picked Arthur out from the modern keeper, probably the best you've seen.
I did, yeah. I can cope with the ball at his feet now. You know, it's a few years.
And it's funny, I heard an interview with David Marshall recently. Obviously, he was forced choice when Arthur came in on loan, and he lost his place to Arthur. And he did say, you know, how talented Arthur was. He said he could do it all. I suppose when you hear a keeper that's played with him, it does come home that you do know a little thing of a goalkeeper.
Yeah, well, then again, it's the ball at your feet, you know, that's not a goalkeeper's duty. You know, you'd be better just coming for a cross ball with your head.
So you reckon now the modern game wouldn't have suited yourself and the keepers you played with?
No, it would never have suited us. Oh, no. No, because they, you know, we had to get the ball. Okay, we did mess about a lot. Rolling the ball out back and forward and getting the ball back, that's when they change it to the four, to the 5 seconds and 9 seconds and get the ball moving, 4 steps and that. But you could throw the ball about as long as you have, you know, goalkeeper uses his hands, he doesn't use his feet. The only time you use your feet is if a man one-to-one and you stick your foot out. But you can use your hands, you know.
Part of the modern game, John.
I think the modern game is going to change, you know. I think it'll change. I think there's going to be some rules getting changed shortly because it doesn't look right. To me, it doesn't make football. It wastes the game. It wastes the game, you know. I'd like to see referees take more. I mean, and I really mean it. More braver with these divers. You know, like that little one with, what do you call him, Neymar. You know, Murdy, Bertie, John Gregg, and a few others would hit him once and he'd be crying. He'd run off the field crying. He couldn't take it. That's another thing that's wasted in the game now. You're not allowed to tackle. You know, the fouls now that for nothing.
Yeah, and it's not that long ago, John, that the likes of Roy Keane was playing. But he wouldn't be able to play in the modern game now either because he'd be pulled up at every tackle.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Now, John, I want to take it back, okay? I want you to take the listeners back to your family history, the Irish connection, and your childhood growing up in Glasgow, and early memories of Celtic.
Well, my first memory, I can go way back, 1940-something, Jimmy Delaney was playing. And it always sticks out in my mind. That's John Kennedy's grandfather. And it always sticks out in my mind. He scored the last-minute goal against England. And then they went to Man United. Everybody thought, oh my God, what's Celtic doing? Get rid of Johnny. Jimmy Delaney. I started going to the games and just going there. We went in the tram car. There was no bus. You walk down to Campbell's Lane to get the tram. It was about a couple of miles. And the tram car into Springfield Road, walk up, into Celtic Park, the old Celtic Park, and watching the hoops. And the atmosphere was great, you know. You could stand and enjoy yourself. Going home and you feel elated when the right result came. And that stuck to me. I remember my first trip to Hampden. Oh, it was very early. But the memory that really sticks out was the Coronation Cup series. I missed the St Mungo Cup series. But the Coronation Cup, 53, the three games against Arsenal, Man U, and Hibs. And that sticks out in my memory. Going to Hampden, seeing us win a big cup. 51, I never got to the cup final when I think it was Big John McPhail scored. Then Sean scored a couple of games, you know, cup finals. To get tickets then was terrible. You know, it was one ticket per person. And I remember all these victories. And you just felt proud of yourself. It was great. Even going to school, you felt good on the Monday, passing all the other schools. And then 53, then 57, I was lucky enough to get a ticket to see the 7-1 game. And that was just the greatest thing that ever happened to me. You know, Celtic beating them 7-1. And of course, you know the story. Everybody said, oh, they were this and they were that. They shouldn't have beat us. But we beat them 7-1. And my father at that time had the daft Celtic man as well, the same as my family, my brothers, even my mother. And he was running a pub in Glasgow at the Salt Market, and it was called the Empire Bar.
Where the Empire Bar is now.
Yeah, same bar. And I used to go in there and give him a hand at the weekends to my pot man, lift the glasses up and clean them and have them ready for the barman to work. And that day, he was walking in to open the bar. The bars were shut and it opened at 5 o'clock. My father was walking up about 20 minutes to five, and this little boy run by him with a Celtic scarf on. My dad said, what's the matter? What's the score? And he went, 5-1. My dad says, And the boy didn't have a scarf. The scarf was rolled up. He said, about 5 minutes later, this other boy ran by and he says, what's the score? He says, 7-1. My father says, oh, for God's sake, you're joking. We never got beat. He says, no, we won 7-1. My father says, we won. We won 7-1. He went and opened the pub before so he could catch all the supporters walking across the bridge. He opened the bar early and the police weren't too happy with him because they did a police office across the road. And he says, Paddy, what are you doing? He says, hey, you think I'm going to miss some trade here? No, you're not on. And that was the 7-1 game. And then about a year and a bit after it, I joined Celtic in 1958. And to think that Bertie Peacock, Charlie Tully and them were still with Celtic and Lee Malkin. I went, geez, so watching them 1 year and then the next year he's playing, training with them. It's just one of the things. It's in your blood. You just get you know, really going. And I've never changed. I'm missing the footballer now. I don't know what to do. I'm actually playing golf now. Oh, I said, oh, geez, so Saturday afternoon playing golf. That's crazy. Come on. But now we were brought up. My grandfather, who left Ireland when he was about 18, under very dubious circumstances, can we say? I know they're statues and placards out in Sligo, out in Geeva about it. And he came over to Scotland. He married my granny Murphy. And when he found out at Ballymote, he says, it's just over the hill from Geeva. And he was a Sligo man, and that was him. So my grandfather said there was nothing bad came out of Sligo. And we were grew up with the Irish connection, cousins and all that. We'd go back and forward to Ireland on holiday. I loved going over to Stranhill on holiday. Once we went to a foreign place, Bundoran, remember that? That's 40 years. Sligo was the place to go. And we were just brought up in the... And that's why I love... If I had a chance to be over there nearly every midweek, just over and back. I was over 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, over with my pal John, and we had about four games of golf up the north. We stayed in Derry with me, Seamus, and we did venture into the Donegal for a wee short period, but we just played golf there. And when I was over there, I just stayed and I said, you know, I would stay here if it was for Celtic.
I'd be too far away from paradise for you, John.
Oh, yeah. It's a travelling back and forth, but, you know, I've got to have that. I'm like Tommy Stevenson. If I don't see it, I'm in trouble. I need to go to a psychiatrist to get calmed down.
Oh, we know. We all know, John. Anyone that knows you knows that if you cut, you would bleed green blood. John, you've given us an introduction there into your early memories of Celtic. Obviously, the 1957 7-1 game stands out. Must have been great to be at that game at a time when Celtic were not the top dogs. Now, I did hear a story from you once. I don't know whether I read it in your book or I heard you chatting about at one of the shows. You bunked off school to go to see Celtic. And can you just tell the listeners about the game and your run-in with the headmaster?
I don't want to talk about that game. That was one of the most hurtful games at Hampden. Celtic were, in the Saturday, were winning 1-0 against Clyde. And it was in the final minute, and the ball came in. Johnny Bonner went for the ball. Frank Meekin was at the front post. And so for some reason or other, the ball finished up in the net, one each. And everybody at that time, they used to blame the Hampden swirl. And I often wonder what the Hampden swirl was till I played there. And then on the Wednesday afternoon was a replay, an early kickoff. And I told one of the teachers, I wasn't having school dinner the day. I was going to go home and get some dinner. He said, okay, as long as you're back. So I went to the game and won nothing. Never forget it. I actually saw it on YouTube last week, the ball going into the net. And I said, oh. And I was walking out Hampden. Now, there was 130,000. And I'm walking out right behind the Celtic goals. I'm walking up the stairs. Oh, terrible, terrible feeling. Disappointment. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I heard the voice shout, Fallon. And I looked, I said, who the hell shout? And I turned around there, the headmaster standing. And he said, I'll see you in the morning at my office, 9:15. So when I went in the next morning, all my pals at school were saying, you're in trouble. I says, wow. He said, oh, the rumour you were caught at Hampden. I says, ah, leave it. So I went into the headmaster's office and he looked at me and he says, well, what have you got to say? I said, it was rubbish. I'm disappointed. I'm heartbroken. And he says, oh, I know how you feel. He says, right, when you go out there, just say I give you 6 of the belt, double-handed. And he cracked his belt about 6 times. And I had to walk out, shake my hands. Oh, kidding on, I'd been battered up and down the headmaster. And they're all saying, who did it go? I says, that old bastard. He battered me. So they all thought I'd got 6 of them. This is the strongest belt. But he was worse than me. But, you know, just shows you, imagine walking out of hand and your headmaster is one of the first to see. I'm like, oh, no. I thought I was in real trouble. But with one teacher, Mr. Russell, wee little, he used to play with Clyde. He never made it, wee kid. That's how he became a school teacher. And he wasn't much of a school teacher either. But he was a Clyde man. And I gave him my view as well. So I'll never forget that. Oh, it was one of the poorest days, sorest days I ever went to Hampden.
John, we're going to talk about some highlights now, and we will get into bits and pieces about your career. But I just want to get your take on Lisbon. You were on the bench. What do you recall of the day before the game, during the game, and after the game? Not only from your player's point of view, but from being a fan.
Well, that morning, it was very calm. Everybody was very calm. We had our breakfast, we had a light lunch. Everybody seemed calm. We were all talking to each other. There wasn't much panic and, you know, worrying about what was happening. Just everybody had their own thoughts. And then when we left Esterol to go to the National Stadium, and I don't know if you know about this story, we were driving towards the stadium. And everybody was waving to us. And somebody says to the driver, excuse me, we're going the wrong way. He didn't know about the stadium. He thought we were going into Lisbon to play. He didn't know it was a national stadium. So we did make a detour and a way back. The supporters were all walking one way and we were going down the other way to get to the stadium. It's comical. The police had to come and bring us round. So that was the only sort of mishap we had. We got down and have you ever been there? And you look at it, the National Stadium, as they called it, and I say, and you went down to the dressing rooms and you looked round about. It was like a public park. You had about six different dressing rooms all in the one block, and you had two teams, Celtic and Inter Milan, and you just walked through a sort of park up through the tunnel. And it wasn't you out onto the tunnel, onto the park. The boys all started singing and all that. Inter Milan thought they were invincible, you know. Sure, like he'd at Swines, they were, you know, we're better news and all that shit. So he just kept looking at them. And we got onto the park, and as soon as we got up the steps onto the behind the goal, Big Jock says, "Right, go and get that bench for me and just take it." I says, "Right." So I ran up, took the bench, and Big Jock just sat, ampled up, and who's walking up was Herrera walking up, and he demanded that he get the bench, and I told him where to go, politely. The policeman was behind me, and I said to the policeman, "Celtic bench, Celtic." He went, "Yes." And Herrera started, and they turned around and told him, "Get." They forced him away as well. So he wasn't happy, and Big Jock says, "Good, that's us one up." Everything was calm, the game. They never caused much bother. You know, see, the more you look at the game, what a boring game it was. You know, looking, because we just attacked, and they just catenaccio. They got a penalty kick, which was a bit dubious. I still think it was a bit dubious, but he went down easy. Then at half time, Big Jock wasn't very pleased with the referee, and he called him for everything. Oh, he'd poking off his nut, calling him for, well, I've got to watch what I'm saying now, because politics come into it now. What he was calling the referee's nationality and who he supported and who he was when he was a boy and all that. He supported a certain man. We were calming him down. We got him in. In the second half, the referee sort of panicked, and he gave us a wee bit more freedom. And he was a bit lenient, but I'll never forget, Tischinger was his name. And we went one up. They won all. There was no panic. There was still no panic. We just kept, Big Jock just said, "Keep playing, boys. It'll come." And then 2-1. Then the final whistle and all hell broke out. And it was every one of the players, okay, the fans. I've told you before, Andrew, it was the biggest disappointment we ever had in our life, winning a trophy. I couldn't walk up all those stairs and come back down with a trophy because the fans were on the field and the moat didn't count. Because they called it a moat. Oh, my God. It was only 4 foot wide. Anybody could have jumped across it. And we had to rush and get down to the dressing rooms. Some players had no boots. Some had no jerseys. The only thing, you were lucky you'd left with your shorts on. People were looking for anything. And they were grabbing strips and everything. And Big Tam was walking about. And the next thing, he finished up in an Inter Milan strip. I don't know. So somebody must have struck. It was lucky he even got that on. But that was the biggest disappointment. That night was a bigger disappointment. We went, Inter Milan refused to come. Seemingly they refused to come to the reception for the both teams, the UEFA or FIFA or whatever. And they were told, no one just said, "Hey, get yourself here." By the time they turned up, it was getting a bit late. And we had brought, the wives had came over that morning. So we'd all planned to go and meet the wives after this meal and have a few hours, because they were flying back at midnight. And the shambles was that the usual speeches, they'll go on and on and on, presidents and secretaries and chairmen. And then medals was brought out of a wee black-brown box. There was 12 medals in it. Billy handed the medals out. Ronnie right round came to me, says, "Right, there's your medal." I said, "Well, thanks." I looked at it, put it in my top pocket, quite happy. Everyone's going hunky-dory. We're just waiting to get away. Big Jock comes up and says, "Where's your medal?" I says, "Why?" He says, "Where is it?" "They forgot the referee's medal." I says, "What?" So he took my medal off me, and that was it. It wasn't until later on in years I found out that he took the medal off. He told me it was for the referee, wasn't it? But he took the medal off me and gave it to Bob Kelly. So one of the presentation Christmas dinners, they handed us these medals, and I had got another one. Unknown to me, it was a replica. And as I said, I never found it for years after it, that it was a replica, but I've got the original one now.
Yeah, Peter Larwell gave you your medal back in April of last year.
Yeah.
How did that come about, John?
There was something that happened in Twitter. Michael Kelly, the famous Michael Kelly. And he'd made a statement, there was only 11 lesbian lines. And somebody quizzed him. He said, "You're wrong. There's 12 lesbian lines." "No, no, no, you're wrong." He says, "Well, if you look at the team sheet, John Fallon's name's on it. He was the only substitute allowed goalkeeper." "No, no, no." So I'd read it and I went on to him and says, "Excuse me, Michael, your uncle got my medal." And that's when I didn't know anything about it. So I don't know what happened. It came out and I didn't know anything about it. And then it came out that hey, I got a phone call from Peter and he had to go in and meet Peter. And he asked me what happened and I just told him the same as what I told you. He said, "I don't believe that." He says, "Well, seemed like a medal's came from nowhere." And he says, "It's yours. It's only, so you'll be getting it." And unfortunately, I think that was when Big Billy died, wasn't it? There's something happened that weekend. I'd lost Esther in the January, December. Big Billy had died. There was something that happened that weekend, I'm not sure. And there was a sort of a thing, but I know I got my medal anyway. The grandkids were there and they were proud because, you know, that you see them going to the games with me and they were all chuffed to see their granddad getting a medal. So that was the meaning of my getting my medal late in life.
John, had Celtic won that famous final in 2003 in Seville, there was a name on the 11 players and the substitutes that played that night. But John Hartson would have been missing that night because of injury, and John's goals got us to the final. So for me, if we had to win that night, John Hartson would be part of the Seville team.
Yeah.
Do you feel that history has let the Lions that didn't play in the final and played along the way has let them down a little?
Well, I don't want to say much, Andrew, because when the 25th anniversary came out, there was a bit of confusion. Bitterness, I would say. I'd received two phone calls from two of the players who'd actually played. One had played in the semi-final, never played in the final. And with another player who was a top scorer, had they played, and he'd noticed it, somebody brought, and he got on the phone to me, and he's shouting and bawling, saying, "Wait a minute, you were the 12th man, you were part of this squad, why you not been recognised?" I says, "Well, just the same as you, Joe and John." I says, "You weren't recognised." I said, "But you've got your medals as well. You know, Celtic gave us 16 medals, in fairness to them. We don't know if they're real or not." But as I said, the medals came out and they were going to have this function and that function. And I was forced to phone a certain gentleman saying, "Look, I couldn't give a damn. If that's the way they want it, let them do it. I couldn't care. Leave them to their own business." And he says, "No, no way." So he called a meeting. And then they called the committee and said, "What are you doing?" There were 16 players. There were only 15 players. I was the only one. I was stripped for every game. I was the only player that never played one game. You can remember Charlie Gallagher played a few games. Big Yogi played a few games. Wally O'Neill played a few games. Joe McBride played a few games. So I was the only one, but I'd stripped. And that was why they were saying to me, "You're part of that squad." So it all came out. They decided 16, and that was it. But you know, it hurts a wee bit. But to me, I couldn't give a toss. If that's what they wanted, that's what they were getting. You know, I thought they were a bit. But it was who made it worse was the Daily Record and STV. Alec Cameron decided to do a TV programme and it was down at CML Hydro and he just took the 11 down. And it's on tape. They were all sitting there, Bobby Murdoch, Jim Craig, Ronnie, turned around and says, "Listen, we're all sitting here." He says, "We're 16 of us." Bobby said, "Aye, John Fallon was stripped for every game. He was a Lisbon Lion." And I know they were, you know, and then when it came out and everything was split up, I know there's still people talk. I know they do, but to me, they can talk what they want. I don't care what they think. I'm proud of being a Celtic player, but if that's what they wanted, they agreed, you know, well, to hell with them.
John, thanks for sharing that with us. You remember Celtic back in 1958. You know, your family must have been so proud, a big Celtic family, the Irish connection. Have you any recollections of that day?
Yes. I played on the Saturday in a trial match and had the honour of actually playing with Charlie Tully that day because the old reserves, what they were talking about the other night there on TV, that the old reserves, if they were injured and were near fitness, they played in the reserves to see how fit they were. We played at Motherwell. And after the game, Charlie wrote something in the Evening Citizen or something. He had an article every week, and he says, "Saw a young goalkeeper today, John Fallon, and he looks the part." I remember that. And I went into training on the Tuesday because it was part of the Kelly Babes training facilities. Billy had just signed. I think Billy was first to sign for the squad. And I was asked by Mr. McGrory to come into the office. Celtic would like to sign me. And I was delighted. I says, "Yeah, okay, no problem." Never asked for what I was wanting. I says, "Yes, I'll sign." And I signed, and they'd made up a shop of the forum. So on the Thursday night, I had to sign it again. But I never asked what I was getting. And it wasn't until he says to me, "John, you never asked what you were getting." I says, "You never told me." And they said that I would be getting about £7 or £8 playing in the reserves. If I went into the first team, I'd get £12. And your bonus was £3 for a win in the first team, 50 pence, £1.50 for a draw. And the reserves was half that again, you know. So I signed and I came home and I looked at my mother and my father. My father, as usual, just sitting reading his paper. And I said, "Well, how'd it go?" He said, "I just signed for them." And he looked at me and says, "What? I wasn't there. You weren't even asked." I said, "No, just asked me if I wanted to sign." I says, "Aye." And I signed. Because the Fallhouse United boys had been there, so I didn't know what was going on when I seen them sitting there, the committee. And they hummed and hawed a wee bit for money. But they got what they asked for. And I just signed, and that was it. The family were going off their nut. "Oh, for God's sake, you never told us. You just said you're playing a game, and that was it." So it came as a surprise to them. I just walked in the house and said, "I've just signed for Celtic."
John, what was the average wage for the average working man then?
Oh, God. Andrew, I think our mechanics, I was an apprentice, and we were getting about maybe £1.70, maybe £7.06 or something, and a mechanic would be maybe giving it £3. So that was big money. That was great money. You know, so my mother just decided that money goes into the bank. You don't get a penny of it. I'll give you X amount for pocket money. And that was it. She just took the money off me into the bank. And from there on, it was just Celtic. That was me. I never told them. I did lose a few friends because I never told them they were signing for Celtic. And some of the boys that went to school with me, when I started training with Celtic, I sort of switched off with them because I'd seen too many boys. And even for this area, Blantyre, there's some, oh, they all talk, they call me lucky. "Oh, you're lucky you got signing for Celtic." And I said, "No, I'm not." I says, "You were an idiot," because they thought they could be a jack lad, run about with their pals, in and out the pubs. And I just switched right off, and I dedicated myself to Celtic, to be a Celtic player. And I think it's worked out great for me, compared with them, you know. And, you know, there's some, in later life, they began to be proud. "Oh, I went to school with you." But when I left with Celtic, went to Celtic at the start, it was different. "Well, he's a snob. He doesn't want to talk to us. Didn't want to go out with us." Because I knew they were going out drinking, maybe going to dancing and all that. But I said, no, that's switch off. To tell you the truth, Andra, I've got to say it. Essie saved me. Because when I met Essie, that was my life changed again. And between Celtic and Esther, that was it.
Now, John, you mentioned Esther, and we will chat about Essie later. Just forced. So you were at Celtic for 14 years.
Yes.
Now, before we look back on some of the highlights of that career, John, when you leave Celtic as a, you're a fan going in, you're a fan coming out, and you're still a fan, you attend home and away games. I've had the pleasure of sharing the car with you. You've looked after me. You've picked me up at airports. You've dropped me back. You've picked me up at train stations. You've fed me. So I know what your passion is for Celtic and how much of a gentleman you are to other fans. You've always time for fans. You've always time for charity events. But when you're leaving Celtic after 14 years as a player, you know, you don't know what's ahead of you with supporters, clubs and following Celtic and the life you're going to have. How hard was it?
Terrible. I did want to leave. I still say, we got back into the team for a couple of games and I remember playing against Aberdeen, got beat 1-0 and Joe Harper, and I'd fought back I think it was about a year out of the game with injury, my back, the septic joints and all that. And I fought my way back into the team and we got beat 1-0. And there was a photo in the back page of the Daily Record, I Joe with the throat, because he'd kicked me in the ground with Joe Harper. And I was ready to punch him. And something happened. Big Jock seen it. Who the hell do you think you are doing that to him? And I turned around and said, maybe if one of your defenders had done it, we wouldn't have got beat. So that was happening. And the next thing I knew, about a week or so later, February or some, Bobby Murdoch, where have you been? I says, I went away after training. He says, he's looking for you. I says, so? I says, he'll see me tomorrow. So I went home, sitting in the house, and Essie says, here's Joe Steen coming here. What's he wanting? I went, I don't know. She says, what did you do? What have you done to him? What did you say to him? I said, nothing. And he came in, he says, right, that's you. You're finished. And I says, why? I'm no. You're going to Motherwell. I said, no, I'm no. And we had an argument. And he told me that I would never kick another ball for Celtic. The fans didn't want me. He didn't want me. And if I didn't go, I'd be finished. Yes, he just turned around and says, Mr. Steen, see that door? Get out of it now. Never set foot here again. I never even talked to you again. Never did. I never did. That was it. I went to Motherwell for 2 months or 3 months, and it was the worst experience I ever had. I had no ambition to play football. If I maybe I went to England, if it gave me a chance, you know, a right transfer, he just kicked me out the door. And it probably would have been different if he'd treated it different. But that was me. And I felt bitter. And then I went up to, remember the Inter Milan game, the penalty kick over the bar? That was on the Wednesday night. And Motherwell was playing Celtic on the Saturday. And I went up to in the front door. Big Yogi was talking to Big Yogi. Somebody spoke to me. And at that time, we used to could walk in, ex-players, and walk straight in the front door. And Big Yogi walked in, and I spoke to somebody and walked in, and I was told, no, you're not getting in. I said, what do you mean? He said, you're not getting in. I went, he said that. He says, oh, the big man. I said, oh, did he? I said, okay then. You know what to tell him. I don't want to say it, but a few words. And I walked away, and by chance I got a ticket off a boy standing next to me and went in to watch the game. So on the Saturday, we played against Celtic at Parkhead. Motherwell made me the captain, and he never even looked at me. I never even looked at him. And I think they beat us 5-2 or 5-3. And some way they got two penalty kicks. I don't know what for. I think I pulled down Wee Louis for nothing, and a trip to Kenny for nothing. And that was it. I never spoke to him. One day at Carplo, it was for Hal Stewart's testimonial, and Celtic's Lisbon squad were playing, and I was in goals. And it was nothing each, and they'd got a penalty kick for some reason, and I saved it. So it went to penalty kicks, and I saved the five penalties, and we won. And Benny Rooney and Michael Jackson were the manager and assistant manager at Morton. And in this wee small room, not even bigger than my wee kitchen, and we're all in there talking to Benny and Michael. And I was last, I was talking to somebody from Greenock, and I was last to go up. And as I walked by the door, I seen some of the boys standing, and I walked in to say hello, and Big Jock was there. And I walked in, and I about turned and says, cheerio, Benny, I'll see you later, son. And I walked out, and that was the last I ever seen him.
You admired him as a manager, but you had your difficulties with him as a person.
Yeah. His man management at times is shocking. You know, he was a great manager, my coaching and all that, but, you know, at times he just didn't know how to treat people. And Sean told him that as well on a few occasions. But that was it, and I just couldn't. It was the worst experience. It never left me for years. You know, I never even near Celtic Park for years. I was that bitter. And I just decided, and Essie said to me, why are you not going? I says, I'm not going. He's there. And when he left, I went back.
Once again, folks, the tape just ran and ran, and we will have part two of the interview with John on Tuesday's show. We just couldn't let this opportunity go to record John's memories. If you are enjoying the podcast and you would like to support us, there's four ways you can do so by visiting CelticFanzine.com. You can donate for the price of a pint, subscribe to the digital or print edition of More Than 90 Minutes, Substart at $5.99. You can join our new membership, which starts at $7.99. Or you can buy some of our merchandise, which starts at £5. We promise no one wanted Google adverts on our website or articles, and no one wanted advert interruptions on our podcast. We're keeping it real and we're keeping it independent. Your support will help us to continue to produce quality independent fan journalism, podcasts, video content, and free live Celtic fan events when we finally get back to doing some. If you are not in a position to financially support us at this time, don't worry. We will still deliver the same quality content to all fans for free. As always, thank you for listening and for your continued support. And special thanks to our producer, Ronan McQuillan. The podcast is available on all platforms. Hit the subscribe button and you will never miss an episode. Alternatively, you can visit CelticFanzine.com/podcasts/, where you will find all the podcasts we have recorded. Please follow More Than 90 Minutes on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. If your business or CSC would like to sponsor the podcast, please email us at info@CelticFanzine.com, or you can contact us through the website or message us on social media. Keep the comments coming in and let us know what guest you would like us to have on the show. And if you have a story to tell, we'd love to hear it. The next podcast, episode 23, will be out on Tuesday, when we will continue our conversation with John Fallon. Enjoy the game on Saturday evening, and when the final whistle has blown, let's hope the boys are leaving Dundee and heading back for Glasgow with 3 points. Enjoy the weekend, whatever you're up to, and make sure you stay safe. I'll be back spinning a few tunes for the first time since last March, and I have to say, I'm looking forward to dusting down the decks. Keep the faith and stay safe.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.